Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Today's show is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing and true automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/Technori. Get your first 2 months for free. If you have received any marketing materials from Technori in your life, it probably came from ActiveCampaign. And so for that, I thank you. And so does ActiveCampaign. Ben, the CEO of Hologram, is here. Ben, first off, it's great to have you back or have you on the show for the first time. You actually pitched on stage with us, and producer Sam and I were catching up before you jumped on here and kind of reminiscing about all the companies in the last, call it 2 years that we did the showcase, are now just like, not that they weren't doing well before, they were doing well, but they just weren't in the public eye. And now a lot of them, yourself including, are raising a buku bucks, are hiring people like crazy, are winning awards all over the place. And it feels like some of the companies, and Hologram is one that I'm in particular interested in, we're working on something that is part of the future. And like, people maybe didn't quite understand it. And I could see investors in the early days being like, I don't know. And now it's like a foregone conclusion, a foregone conclusion in this case, that things are going to go well. So I just want to congratulate you on the success since we last talked.
Yeah, no. Thank you. It's been kind of a crazy couple of years, but all great stuff. So yeah, really appreciate it.
Did I see you were a Chicago Innovation Award winner?
Yes. Yeah. We just won that, I believe a couple of weeks ago.
Welcome to the club. We got that. It was like 2013 or 14. And then I think we've been a disappointment to them, but you won't be, we just sort of talked our way into it. Maybe that's how we got there. But nonetheless, thank you for joining us. And I guess we'd start this whole thing off with, what is Hologram? And then I want to go down this sort of journey that you've gone, in particular, the early days, because I remember the conversations we had on stage and the questions. I mean, I legit remember talking to you before the show and saying, how do we want to say this to an audience that won't understand 90% of what we're about to talk about? And if I'm not mistaken, that was when we talked a lot about latency and we talked about video streaming, and we had a couple different other companies that were there on that same showcase event. And it was like way over people's heads. And now, partially because the world has moved on, but also COVID has forced us to look at kind of the future of really everything from communication to applications, IoT, just the expectations we have, you know, in this world. You've got a Peloton behind you, I imagine. That's what I think I see behind you. Everything is connected. Everything we do is connected and virtual. So people have been forced to learn these tools. And now I think if we did the showcase today, there'd be no need to give a layman's term. So I'm excited to hear how your pitch and how the way that this business is viewed has evolved over the last 3 years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even over the last, you know, 6 years when we started it, I think, you know, our vision has kind of remained the same, which is to provide a really easy way for anyone to connect anything to the internet. So we always talk about it in terms of being able to connect any device to any network instantaneously anywhere. We accomplish that through a SIM card, which works in over 190 countries, across 550 carriers, generally more than a couple carriers in every country worldwide. And so, you know, when we first started in 2013, right, IoT was just sort of becoming a thing. You know, I still think IoT is kind of a strange term because it really just refers to this idea of everything being connected, right? Or, you know, bringing the things that are offline, online, or connecting the physical world to the internet. And you know, people were like, you know, why would you use this? Why wouldn't I just use Wi-Fi, et cetera, et cetera? But I think what we're seeing is that, you know, there's just a myriad of applications out there in the world that are going to require connectivity, and they need to be able to access the internet kind of seamlessly. And that's what Hologram provides, both through just the actual SIM card connectivity, but then through, you know, the ability to kind of programmatically access that connectivity via API, and then have sort of nice management tools, you know, and supply chain management features in the dashboard. So yeah, it's definitely, you know, I think the biggest change over the past 3 years has been, you know, seeing a lot of applications out there in the world that people can relate to more. So like when you see scooters flying around the street, you know, all those things need connectivity in order to function. And, you know, we can provide that type of connectivity. So it's a great example of a use case for something like Hologram. You know, it's really like providing phone plans for things that aren't phones. That's what we do. So we're kind of a software provider, but we're a telecommunications provider, like a next gen telecommunications provider is the way we think about it.
It's so funny because it's like the two parts of that I just start almost laughing in the back of my head here is, one, your comment on IoT. It's just there really are only a handful of things in tech that have been just really broadly, really badly named. And like, you know that it was named by someone who had no idea of where this was going to go. Like, yeah. It was absolutely a shot in the dark. It was like, oh, the Internet of Things, like we'll be able to go in and look at all the data behind these things and it'll be like a different internet. And it's like, no, like it's so interesting to me that, and then I think about that layered in with you talking to people even 3 years ago and saying, we're going to be kind of like a telephone plan for your toys. Like, that's kind of what we're going to be. And they'd be like, that doesn't seem like such a great business. And then you fast forward and literally every single thing in my house, like I have routers all over my house for exactly the reason that you just described. And it shouldn't be that way. And hopefully soon it won't be that way. But like, I've got a Tesla, so it's parked in the garage. It needs to update all the time. It has a bad Wi-Fi signal through 9 walls to get there, so it doesn't update. So I got to pull my fucking car to the side of the house so that works. I've got this computer. I've got, you know, the Peloton type stuff. I've got all these things scattered throughout the house. They all update. They all do different things all the time. And if the Wi-Fi is down or 9 devices are on the Wi-Fi and it gets weak, the whole like system falls apart.
Yeah.
And that isn't even talking about the stuff we actually use day to day in our hands. So I think it's kind of crazy that you saw this. Like, I guess, yeah. I'm curious how you saw this.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I think that, you know, I guess maybe you go back to thinking about the concept of like someone naming this the Internet of Things. Like, I think at one point in time, people tried calling it the Internet of Everything or the Internet. You know, there are a whole bunch of names tried and like just none of them really worked. And even to some extent, I think IoT is just sort of like a term, like you said, people are like, oh, that's kind of weird way of describing
it. It's like, it's in a lot of ways, it's like AI, like people say that, but like the actual application of it and what it used is, I mean, it is artificial intelligence, but not really.
Yeah. It refers to like a genre of things almost. And so, yeah. So I think that, you know, around 2013, people started really like giving it a name, but this is truly something that's been happening since connectivity started to exist, since wireless started to happen, first started with phones. And then, you know, even prior to people talking about IoT, you know, there were plenty of applications out there. It used to be called machine to machine telecommunications, M2M. And that would be like, you know, fleet tracking on trucks. That was those were some of the first things that were done, like telematics applications. And that trend just continued. And I think for me, you know, just being someone, you know, mostly a digital native, right? Like still, I'm old enough that I remember a time without computers, but, you know, young enough that like I pretty much grew up with them. You know, it just seemed natural to me that everything at some point would be running some form of software to some extent, right? And you're going to just see a continued proliferation of that. You know, I think some classic things you think of when you think about the future, right, are like, oh, hey, you know, why do I have delays at the airport, right? Like, oh, you know, I'm sitting on the runway because some part failed and now they have to like go get the part, and like all these different things are happening. But realistically, that plane should be connected to the internet in some way, shape, or form. It should be able to do some, you know, let's talk about AI, right? It should be able to do some sort of predictive maintenance and figure out, oh, this part frequently breaks down around this period of time. It should be able to phone home to a parts depot and, you know, a robot should come with the part and, you know, someone and should either fix the plane or, you know, have a mechanic to fix the plane. And so if you just start thinking about what the future looks like, you know, in the world of sci-fi or something like that, and how you get there,
which is not far off, by the way. Like, yeah, I really, there's like you kind of gave the progression in your answer. I mean, like, you literally, for all of those who are listening and are like, oh, fuck, I'm jobless. Not yet, but there is this notion that like we'll have these software systems that enable us to be a little bit smarter and quicker and ahead of time. The production lines are a little bit a step ahead. They know more, and the robot pulls it off of a shelf and puts it into a shipping container and it ends up at O'Hare Airport. And then, you know, Stu grabs it out of the box and installs it in the airplane until the robot's smart enough to put Stu out of business.
Yeah. And there's all sorts of like fun. Yeah. I mean, yeah. We could chat. I have many thoughts on all that stuff, but the,
after you're done.
Totally,
let's.
Totally. But the, but you know, if you imagine kind of like what the world, if you imagine what the world's going to look like and how it's going to get there, the only way that can happen is if there's ubiquitous connectivity. And so that's sort of where, you know, hologram comes in. I think even you were talking about, you know, your Tesla doesn't have great reception. You know, Teslas do have cellular connectivity. I think we provide better cellular connectivity. I don't know where they're getting it from.
I don't understand that, by the way. So they do have cellular connectivity because I can watch Netflix anywhere I'm at and I can do all this. Why does it not upload the update or download the update from that? Why do I have to still be connected to Wi-Fi if it's not about surfing my Wi-Fi and knowing what I'm searching for?
You know, I don't know, but I would suspect it's just because it's a really large file. And so it costs them money. That'd be my best guess.
Well, they're charging us now. Anyone who's not grandfathered in, you pay like $9 or $10 a month for the connectivity.
Oh yeah. I mean,
it's legit, don't understand what they're doing.
I don't know. I would love to find out if someone from Tesla is.
We should start a Twitter battle with Elon Musk. You'll get publicity. I'll lay on the grenade. I'll be the asshole. You just come in with like the nice answer and then slide hologram.io right in the front of the line and we'll just laugh. It'll be fun.
Totally. Yeah, no, I would love to find out. I mean, and mainly because I think these are interesting solvable problems, right? And it really starts, you know, everyone's been talking about 5G, right? And that's a thing that's been a buzzword for quite a long time. And now it actually exists to some extent, at least where I am in the West Loop in Chicago, I get access to it. And I think what's interesting about 5G is you're starting to create this world. It's convergence in my view of wireless and wired connectivity. So essentially, you know, you now start to end up in a world where, you know, like a 5G tower is nothing but like really like a big Wi-Fi router, and you can access that Wi-Fi through your SIM card as an authentication mechanism rather than, you know, through like your Wi-Fi password. So now your Peloton, right? You can connect that to the internet via Wi-Fi in your house, or you can connect it to the internet via 5G. If you have like a 5G chip inside your Peloton. And so this convergence of wired and wireless, I think start to create a world where like truly you have ubiquitous connectivity. And in the past where people would be like, oh, why wouldn't I just use Wi-Fi to connect my thing to the internet? Why do I need hologram? I think now you start to see that actually cellular will become kind of the predominant means of connecting things to the internet for this reason. And 5G is sort of a part of that.
We talked about that on stage. I think that was it 2017 or 16? I can't recall when we had you on stage with those guys. But I remember talking specifically about that. Like, where are we going with this? Is it going to be LTE everywhere and 5G everywhere? And it wasn't even about the 5G conversation as much as it was just about like, if you could just stop thinking about, now go back in time if you're listening to this and you go to 2016 or 17 or whatever it is, and think about your routines. You know, how close were you to your phone all the time? I know we all are right next to our phone in our pocket all the time now. We were then. How often are you walking out and you want to do something on your computer or whatever it is you want to do and you can't access Wi-Fi? You go to a Starbucks. Like that was totally, I mean, it's still kind of a thing minus COVID, but it was totally a thing. And now I have SIM card in my iPad. I use my iPad on the go. That's maybe the only reason I use my iPad is because I can use it to connect. My phone, I don't like doing the bridge to iPad. I think it's not nearly as effective. So I have that. I have it in my watch so I can leave all this shit behind and go out for a run if that were to ever happen again. And, you know, I envision a world now where it's like Wi-Fi is actually kind of a pain in my ass unless I'm going to be completely stagnant and like stationary in this space, in which case maybe then it makes sense. But at that point, if everything else I have is connected to LTE, then I don't really even need that either. And then it sort of becomes this, like, and I think we even said this on stage, like you'll see the progression of Wi-Fi and other things that come up for connectivity here, Bluetooth and other things, will sort of find their place. They'll find the thing that they're really most used for, and then the most human beings will kind of gravitate towards a mobile internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it seems like we're almost there.
No, I think that's an accurate assessment. It sounds a little bit crazy because I think that most people are used to thinking about cellular as, your cell phone, and that's basically it. But when you start to think about it essentially as just another means through accessing the internet, I mean, I think literally actually one of our VP design lives a couple blocks away from me here, and he got the Verizon 5G router thing. And he's getting like gigabit speeds through it. It's like a straight up like gigabit connection, but it's wireless, which is insane.
Can he airdrop to you from your house? Can you just airdrop right across the way?
We're not that close, but it's
let's just say you test that out.
Yeah, totally. No, but it's kind of insane. So I think that when you start thinking about cellular as just the internet now, it sort of changes things. And also I think, to the credit, it's been interesting for us over the past 6 years figuring it all out. But working with, various carrier partners, right? We're seeing people that are starting to understand this and are coming up with pricing and business models that support that. I think in the past it might have been prohibitively expensive to use cellular for certain types of technologies. I remember like way back when we were talking to Pebble. You remember those guys? I think they got.
Oh my God! Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Bought and then destroyed and then shut down.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was hot for a minute. Pebble was like the future. I remember kids like, I got a Pebble and it was like the whole coolness factor that you had this stupid thing. And now imagine that you're just like, what?
Totally. Yeah. No, I remember that. It was, I can't remember the founder's name, but I remember we were talking to them about they had something they were going to launch on Kickstarter that was sort of like a little mobile, like, tracker thing, and it was because it was Pebble, even though it was a Kickstarter, they knew that they were gonna sell like millions of units or whatever. But like the costs just didn't work for what they wanted to do. Like they wanted to do all these sorts of things, and I was like, it's gonna cost you, X dollars a month, and they're like, that's way too high. And I'm like, there's just nothing that can be done. Because the way that cellular was priced throughout the industry just wasn't able to support that. I think that's no longer, or it's quickly evolving where people are realizing that, hey, we want to be able to support these high bandwidth applications. We want to be able to, I want to be able to stream my Peloton over Wi-Fi over 5G. Right.
Over
LTE, and I think that, any of the US carriers would be extremely happy if that was the case. So they're starting to, I think it's becoming more accessible, essentially in that sense.
I mean, talk about accessibility and just common. I know that we live in a bit of a bubble in the sort of tech sphere. We're always trying, we're like the first ones to jump on like a new random gizmo or app or thing, because it's just like, I want to see what they're trying to do here. But I look at my subscriptions on my iPhone, and the main ones at the top that I'm constantly upping is data plan. I mean, getting to like 2 terabytes now to be able to store stuff, and my having LTE and having 5G on the phone and on the iPad and on the watch and like all of the connectivity in my house, like, that's number one and two. And then underneath it is like all of the different apps that I pay for that are basically their entire existence predicates that I have the first two. If I didn't have the first two, the rest of them are completely useless. And I just think it's kind of crazy that, like, if I know I'm an early adopter, but if I'm on that and you're probably not too different than me and all these other people are on it, like, that's where it's going. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not going back.
Yeah.
And that's a crazy ass thing to think about. Cause I think that's one of the, not to go completely on a tangent, but like, that's one of the things people really have missed about Apple, like from a stock perspective, and just like people thinking, oh, Apple's done. Like, the iPhone didn't sell as well 3 years ago. Dude, the Apple is the vehicle for every single app that you use in your life. And that app, like, that app is powered through data, and they're the ones storing it in this particular case if you're using it on Apple. And oh, the password security, so now it's the safest way, so you're almost certainly going to buy it. And it just layers on top of it. And every device they sell you, it needs its own SIM card, its own plan. That is the brilliance. It's the service model that's predicated on the use factor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all this stuff is layered on top of each other, right? And that's what excites me overall about, building a business like Hologram, is we get to kind of be an infrastructure provider that enables a lot of these, devices, whether they're, currently, right, we're very, very much focused on, non- non-like phone things, right?
Yeah.
So you know, your scooters, your drones, your robots, your whatever it is, right? Your POS systems. But you know, all this stuff is converging, right? So could there be a world where, you know, we're providing, you know, we're the infrastructure provider, the connectivity provider for some of these other types of devices? I think absolutely. And you already see, you know, speaking of Apple, right? You know, you already see them kind of leading, on the connectivity side of things in terms of the way that they do connectivity on iPhones. You know, they have, you know, you have an eSIM technology now, in an iPhone where it's all kind of electronic, and you can choose your carrier without having to physically, adjust the SIM card. That's sort of where the industry's headed. And we think about that a lot in terms of, you know, this concept of, you know, it's sort of esoteric, but we talk about this idea of like turning connectivity, into software. That's sort of like what we want to be able to do. I think you're absolutely correct. You know, all these things sort of play into each other. I think Apple, you know, specifically, if you know, on that is really, you know, I think it's really fascinating because, people are kind of like, to your point, right? It's like, oh, like how much further can you take the iPhone? You know, it's kind of like reached its ultimate, reached its ultimate form factor to some extent, right? But, you know, I think there's this theory, right? There's no one coming to supplant them, right? They're essentially going to have the reason they're a $1 trillion company is because the cycle. It used to be that there was like a tech company and then someone made something better and then, you know, so that you had these 10-year, 12-year cycles. But now I think the cycle is stretched so far, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, who knows? And that's how you end up with a $1 trillion valuation, you know, when you're doing your discounted cash flow analysis or whatever. And I think that that's, I think that's true though. I think that in general, right now in tech, you're starting to see a convergence of a lot of things that are going to create market leaders that will be market leaders for a really long time. So
I totally agree. And you know, you brought it up with the Apple and the iPhone and the eSIM card. The interesting part about this, just to like nail home where Hologram lines up in the world, it doesn't just have the eSIM card. It also still has another SIM card, and it's not there as like some kind of backup or fancy wing. It is because you can have multiple networks running through the same device. And I think that's where this gets, in my opinion, and you're obviously way more educated in this than I am, but in my opinion, I look at these devices and I think we look at it in an analog perspective. We look at your Peloton as your Peloton, and so its Wi-Fi is on a network, and you forget that Peloton of the future is yours and your wife to maybe a kid. And maybe you each pop a different SIM card in, or they all are multiple at that point, eSIM cards, and you jump on different networks and the bike has different capabilities for different people with different things. And right now we don't really, you know, Wi-Fi doesn't work like that. And that's where having a dedicated SIM card and dedicated sort of network that it can be on is sort of the game changer. The iPhone, this I think is the first one that they've made where you can have my phone through my eSIM card T-Mobile, but I can drop another one in and have a business line and not need two phones and not be that guy. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's very fascinating.
Yeah, no. And I think, so that's an interesting use case, right? Like that I actually wouldn't have thought of, this idea that, you know, you kind of want a business phone and a personal phone so you can have two different profiles potentially. I think what we see most frequently is, you know, Peloton's not necessarily the best example in my view, because it's a fixed asset to some extent. Like it sits where it sits. Yep. And then like you get, you kind of like, I know what, you know, who's going to provide good connectivity, where I am. Plus like to some extent in urban areas, you know, depending on where you are, you're going to have different providers be stronger or weaker, but you're always going to get some sort of signal, depending on which, you know, if you're using one of the major providers in the United States. I think where it gets more interesting, and this is why we do this, you know, why we have multiple options from an IoT perspective, you end up with devices that are being deployed worldwide or, you know, throughout the continental United States, but, you know, basically anywhere without really any knowledge of what the coverage situation is going to be like when they get there. You know, you might be deploying, let's say you're manufacturing POS systems, right? And you're giving them to various different restaurants and, you know, you're in New York City, you know, you're going to be fine on any of the major networks. But if you're in Billings, Montana, you know, there might only be might be a rural carrier out there that you're going to need access to in order.
Probably owned by Walmart is my guess.
Totally. And so, that's, I think the really important thing there, that, you know, these types of devices that are not, you know, consumer, have really robust connectivity needs where you need access to multiple networks because you're really moving in a way that people kind of like stick to their loops to some extent, right? Like I'm certainly guilty of that, especially now more than ever, right? It's not like you're really going anywhere. And so you can get by with one carrier, but a lot of times these other types of devices can't.
So I think we've covered the gamut of how crazy this can get, and we don't need to go into this, but like the other part of this concept is that our machines are just now becoming, especially with Apple, going back to Apple with their new ARM system they've built, mm-hmm. and with, I would say the A14 chip that's in iPad is among the most ridiculous things that I've ever seen. These are machines that can power a lot. And we don't use them. The buyers buy it like they buy a sports car. They don't know how to drive it, but they buy it because it's cool. And if you are running automations and all kinds of different, you know, sort of technical software on the back end of this, and it's running in the background, but you're just still using the device in a superficial manner, we haven't even gone into that. But like there's, to me, that's another part of this where we're distributing machines in everyone's hand, in billions of people's hands across the world. And I think that's what I definitely don't want to go down the Bitcoin and blockchain hole, but that's one of the things that I think people don't quite grasp most about it is the distribution of network and distribution of machines that can do things in the background while we're still texting and clicking on things on Instagram is an insanely untapped world.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that that's, I think more than anything, when I think about stuff like that, I generally think about the fact that you just have a ubiquity of computing in general now. And, you know, for us, it's interesting because a ubiquity of computing means you need a ubiquity of connectivity in this day and age. But, you know, for the world, what's interesting about that, I think, is you start to very much arrive at a place where everything is able to, you know, just be a lot smarter and be a lot more tuned to your needs. It makes, you know, we're increasingly approaching some form of symbiosis with machines, right? And that's like a kind of, you know, as machines get smarter and we get better at manipulating the inputs and outputs of what they do. You know, you start to, you know, we already are kind of part cyborg, right? I think that's something that Elon Musk likes to talk about, right? Like when you sit there like typing away on your phone on Twitter, you know, that's you're merging with the machine through your thumbs. And so, you know, I think the ubiquity of computing, the ubiquity of connectivity just starts to, it's part of a broader trend of over the next, you know, over the next decades, right? You know, just the world becoming, you know, kind of the future that, you know, the world of science fiction in a lot of ways.
Oh, for sure. And I think Elon took it a step further actually and made a comment about how inefficient our thumbs are and that eventually it needs to be done in our brain, which is why he's working on putting sensories in everyone's brain, which I just can't wait. I can summon my Tesla by blinking my eyes. And then we'll all be walking around short circuiting and hit the wrong network and then next thing you know, you're done.
You don't want to be without connectivity when, you know, when everyone's linked up, right?
Yeah. Which I just said this, but I kind of want to, I don't know if you ever watched the movie Short Circuit, but now I kind of want to go back and watch it. It's one of the best, Johnny number 5 is like the original robot. If you haven't acted out, that's like right up your alley.
It's
old school Steve Gutenberg. Oh, it's solid. Number 2, it's one of the only movies that like the second one is actually better than the first one. But Steve Gutenberg special.
Cool.
All right. So I think we've covered a lot of what potential of connectivity is and what hologram is. And I think people can go to hologram.io and they can look at all this stuff and probably understand maybe 2% of where we're going to go. just because the world is advancing so quickly. And like, if you didn't see, I mean, there's no way to really see COVID coming, but if you had not seen COVID coming, you couldn't have predicted that it would put us in a place where connectivity and remote everything and digital everything was going to be totally mainstream. And now when we come out of this, you really can't undo that. So I think it's just like expedited this entire journey, as you mentioned, for your own business. I guess the part that still is curious to me is you as a young person in school and being interested in all of these different technology things, how do you get to this point? Like, it's one thing to see this and be fascinated, but how do you build a company like Hologram and go through, because there really aren't a lot of businesses that are started that it's so ahead of the curve, the education curve. You really have to find people who are like almost identical to you to have the conversation, to get a step forward. And you've been able to do this for, you said what, 6 years. So like for 6 years, four of those 6 years, you're having conversations where you have to like search and hunt to find the right people to talk to. And I don't even like that. That's the part that's fascinating. How do you build something like this? How do you decide to build something like this?
Yeah, that's a good question. So yeah, I mean, you know, I can just tell you my own kind of personal journey, I guess, in that sense. I don't know. I think that in general, right, if you have strong conviction about the way that the future is going to look, then, you know, you are going to be best served by helping to create that version of the future. You know, I think that, you know, there's in 0 to 1, right? And I think Peter Thiel draws that like 2x2, right? This idea of that, like, America used to be kind of filled with people who were optimistic. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like optimistic and concrete versus like optimistic and it's like optimistic, pessimistic, concrete, abstract. So like if you go into finance, right, you're essentially like optimistic in the abstract. You're like, I think that the world's going to get better. I'm investing in companies because I think things are going to go up and whatever. But you don't really necessarily have like a very specific goal in mind besides just the world's probably going to get better and financial markets are going to perform. There's you know, optimistic and concrete, which is essentially like, you know, in the 60s, you know, we used to engage in a lot of like really big public works projects as a nation. So it's like, we're going to build like the Golden Gate Bridge. I don't know when the Golden Gate Bridge was built. So like, I could be totally butchering this, but like, yeah. We're going to build the Golden Gate Bridge, right? Or we're going to build, you know, something, right? And this is going to solve some major problems. So that's like optimistic and concrete. And I think entrepreneurship is generally speaking optimistic and concrete. You know, you're essentially saying, you know, I think, you know, when you look at something like Stripe or really any like company, right, that you look at with like, you know, envy, or that you look at as an analog for success. A lot of times it's a very specific concrete vision about what you think the future is going to look like. And then you start to execute towards that vision. And so as that relates specifically to me, you know, I always knew that I wanted to start a business. That was sort of, you know, my grandpa was an entrepreneur. I just kind of like was raised with this idea that it was a normal thing to do, which I understand is not the case for everyone. Although I think it would be good if that was the case for everyone.
I think we're heading there. I think yeah. Like in some regards, not everyone is going to be meant for that, but and there's also massively different levels of totality when it comes to entrepreneurship. Like you don't have to start Stripe. You could just start a lemonade stand. As long as the lemons are good, you're good.
Yeah. Or you can, you know, you could be a creative, you know,
self-sufficient.
And you can make music and sell it online and just kind of live your life. And I think that's
go to songfinch.com. You sign up and you write some songs for our gifts and it'll be great. A little free plug for myself.
There you go. Exactly. It's perfect. But yeah, so, you know, I think for me, it was always just, I wanted to start a company. And I sort of structured my career like that. You know, very much, you know, I spent time at Groupon, and kind of had the opportunity to help build out a business unit there, which is sort of like entrepreneurship. And then I ran a business in Singapore called Food Panda. And that was, you know, very much kind of the opportunity to run and operate a business. But, and I was a co-founder, but I wasn't raising capital for that business. You know, it's a sort of a studio model. So it wasn't truly my own in that sense. And then when I moved back to the United States, I was pretty much determined to start something. And I think Hologram, you know, I joke was like kind of the best of a bunch of bad ideas. And truthfully, it was very future forward, but it felt to me that there were a couple like things that kind of guided that. Like one is when I was studying abroad in London, I worked for this guy who was the head of European equities. I was working at BMO Capital Markets, and you know, he was looking at investing in brokerage or opening brokerages in Asia. And we're just talking about the concept of like in baseball, like you always want to hit it where the other people aren't, right? So you always first like rule is like you kind of want to like find something that no one else is doing to some extent. Like second rule is like, I think this is my own thing. Like I think you want to pick like a big wave to sort of surf in terms of technology, right? So you know, like apps or like mobile or social or whatever, these are all like big waves. For me, Hologram is very much built on IoT, however poorly named it is.
Yeah, gives you options. You at least have, pinned down. If something goes wrong, it's not all over.
Yeah, and it just, you know, just general idea, right? Like it's going to be a good market. It's going to support the business, all those sorts of things. And then in terms of actually building it tactically, I mean, I think a lot of that just came down to, you know, good persistence, which is still required. You know, we're definitely, you know, we're growing fast, but we have ambitions to be much larger. And then some amount of luck, and finding the right people. Right. So I think you mentioned, you know, you have to spend all this time, kind of in a world where people see the world exactly the same as you. Well, you know, so early on in 2013, there were definitely people who saw the world like this. It was a smaller group of people, and that group of people has expanded, and then on a very like sort of tactical concrete level, I was just lucky enough to meet Pat, my co-founder, who like literally, you know, kind of independently of me, we saw the world almost exactly the same. Those sorts of things are kind of, you know, some amount of luck is always going to be required when starting a business, in my view.
Yeah,
sure. But I think that, especially now, with, you know, the way the internet's structured, right, you can find people who, you know, you can find people who will engage in and probably feel the same as you about some idea around the world, pretty much anywhere. Sometimes, you know, for good, sometimes for bad, right? You know, there's plenty of really, really weird, bad ideas out there that people, really seem to latch on to.
There are no shortage of weirdos. That has been confirmed over the past several years, for sure.
Totally. But I think that, you know, I think it's a combination of, I think to kind of synthesize that all, right, I think it's a combination of this idea of being willing to be optimistic and concrete and kind of like build the future that you believe in. You want to support that with data, right? Make sure that you're not like crazy. And then finding like-minded people and then having the persistence to kind of go forward and do that. And to some extent, I think what people I think should always realize is that you're generally speaking going, if you can stomach it, you're going to have the best sort of like potential outcomes from a risk reward perspective, starting your own business to some extent.
I love the way you're describing this. It's like, it's so we obviously we talk about this kind of stuff a lot. And in the newsletter, when I write about the companies that I'm featuring, I have this section that's kind of for the founders. It could be a CEO, it doesn't have to be the founder. But there's this like, you're describing it so perfectly. And it doesn't have to be that way for every single business, but it kind of does if you're in a business that like there's a vision that needs to be kind of manifested. I described it in the last newsletter is like the character trait that you have, regardless of all this other stuff, is there's a ability to pull on a single-minded determination. I believe this thing to be true. I can explain why I believe it to be true. I'm not telling you it's true. I'm telling you I can explain to you why I believe it to be true, which is like half the battle. That's your North Star. And then the piece that I think is, I don't know if it's innate. I kind of feel like it is. I don't think this is like that can be nurtured. This part I think is more of a nature, and that is this distracted obsession. I'm not obsessed with like money. I'm not obsessed with this particular Hologram is X. Hologram could be Y, Z, A, B, who cares? I'm obsessed with this notion that this thing is going to be this way. and I'm just going to go after it. And like, no matter what, I'll adjust and pivot and whatever. But to me, I'm on the same line. Like other people would look at you and think it's like this zigzag, but in your brain, it's like, pfft. And I guess, I don't know, you describe that in a way that I don't think we've had a lot of founders on here, but few have described their, it's almost like you took left brain, right brain and just went.
I think about this stuff a lot. So hopefully it's helpful to someone who's listening to this. I think conviction matters in all things, whether it's investing or entrepreneurship. And I think being able to form conviction is an important trait. And then, essentially executing on that conviction, will produce good results. Even if I had started something that didn't succeed, right? But I think this is, people get caught up on this, probably not as much in the Bay Area, but I think that, if we're talking about Chicago a little more locally, right? I think people get caught up on this concept that what if I fail or whatever? And I think that generally speaking, You're always going, forming conviction and going after something, even if you fail, you're gonna learn so much in the process that, you're gonna, whatever you do next, you're going to be substantially better at. And so I never really saw it. So I think that that's, yeah. I mean, that's sort of how I view the world.
No, I love that. I hope people get something from that. I think, kind of on an ending note of this, you mentioned Chicago in particular, and it's ironic that the newsletter today went out. My first thing was basically on this hustle porn concept, like too much of this, like, oh, I got to work hard, hustle, fly, fail, succeed, struggle. In my mind, I've never viewed it like one-to-one like that. Like I look at a company in several facets and layers, a totalitarian failure to me would be that I failed at every single part. I couldn't fund it. I couldn't build it. I couldn't sell it. It was just nothing. Maybe I learned something from, but like generally speaking, bad. You can build something that changes the world that just isn't the brand that does all the work at the end. You can be very, very successful at coming up with something that is novel and game changing, but you failed to raise money or you failed to sell to somebody else did it and sold it better, whatever. So I think the Chicago mindset that I don't like, it's not necessarily just a failure part. It's this concept that like, it's all one. You can only be successful because you've raised a shit ton of money and some investor called it cool, or it's nothing. And that's the thing I want to get away from.
Totally. And I mean, I don't even know, well, better than I do if that's, if that's sort of a Chicago mentality, because I know
there's a Midwestern sort of, humility, I don't want to put myself out there. And honestly, since we're talking about the main thing in Chicago that I have noticed talking to all these founders is the humility factor lets them let someone else score what is success. You tell me what the terms of success are rather than me tell you whose idea it is. And that I let you think that you failed when in reality you're like, we weren't playing the same game.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, and you have a lot more of these conversations than I do. So I trust your kind of viewpoint there. I hear you say that, right? Like what that makes me think of, actually, to be honest, is just, the other piece, right? When I was starting out, it's like, what is this company going to be? Right. Is it going to be a lifestyle business? Is it going to be, something where it's just two people cranking away and like, we kind of like, and we kind of just like live the good life, because we figured out a way to make, $20,000 a month a piece or something like that. And like, whatever, it's good. Yep. Or is this going to be, a category defining business? And, we've very much with Hologram, we've defined it as, the latter, right? We're going to be a category defining business. When you think of connectivity, you think of Hologram. We want to connect, be the place that you come to connect devices to the internet, specifically Internet of Things devices today. That definition matters a lot. It impacts the way that you fundraise. If you fundraise, it impacts, all these sorts of things. And of course, Basecamp, right? Very famous Chicago company. I mean, they're very much in the in the sort of like, hey, like we are not a startup, like we're a small, we are a small business, and like we're awesome at being a small business, and like that's what we do. And they're very, you know, I love their books. Like I think that a lot of their stuff around work culture is excellent. So I think that, but you know, they're very, very specific about kind of like what they believe and how they want to execute on it. And I think that that forming your philosophies around what you want your business to be, how you want, what you want your life to be like, all these sorts of things are really important. I've never been a fan of this idea that like, oh, you should just, you know, just hustle and make more money and so on. Cause like, you know, it's sort of like
mindless.
Like why, you know,
at some point I say this all the time. You can't, even the greediest asshole I've ever met runs out of steam. If you're really just chasing that, like you, if you get really good, you'll just get bored or you'll become evil because you'll be chasing things for just literally the sake of it, which we've seen, I don't know, kind of recently, But notwithstanding, I should say it's ironic that you use Basecamp because you're the podcast following up my last podcast, which was Jason Fried. So,
oh, there you go. Yeah.
You're in good company.
Totally.
We just
talked
about that, folks. Go back and hit the backwards button and check out Jason Fried talking about why email sucks and hey is great. Ben, this has been a blast. I love catching up with people that we've seen on stage and have been kicking ass and taking names. And I think Hologram is going to be one of those cool companies that Chicago is going to be like, oh man, like that was here. What? You know, I think you're on a rocket ship and it's gonna be really cool to watch.
Yeah. Thank you. No, thanks for having me. It's a really fun conversation. And so hope to be back in the future.
Oh, you'll be back for sure. People go to check out hologram.io and check out the business. Is there any place people can follow you? Do you contribute, write blogs or anything like that? It's okay to say no.
I'm working on it. Honestly, just, you know, you can find me on Twitter. It's just B Forgan. Basically any social platform, I'm just B Forgan.
Find me on Peloton, take a race. We'll talk there.
I'm also B Forgan on Peloton if you want to add me on there Peloton. You go.
It's a race, man. Oh, Ben, thank you so much. Everyone else who's listening to this show, you can subscribe to the Technori newsletter. Check out the company feature today. We just dropped the one on Intellivision's product Amico, which you can invest in as a revenue stream, which is kind of an interesting way to invest. It's not just equity. It's actually investing in the revenue stream, which is cool. So that's it, folks. Follow me on Twitter. Follow Katoon @Katoon and follow Technori @Technori. Boom. That's a wrap.